Well, before I actually begin my sermon in earnest, I have two comments that I want to make. One is, there are things in Scripture that are often funny, and we can't recognize them as funny most of the time because they're translated from another language, they come to us from another culture, they come from us to another time in history, but every so often they are there. And there's one today, it's in the reading from Exodus, and let's see, at the end of the reading, it says, when the layer of dew lifted, there on the surface of the wilderness was a fine, flaky substance, as fine as frost on the ground. And when the Israelites saw it, they said to one another, what is it? For they did not know what it was. And Moses said to them, it's the bread that the Lord has given you to eat. So, what do you think the word manna means? Bread? Everybody think that?
Yeah.
Anybody got any other idea?
What?
Yes?
Don't know.
What's that?
It means don't know.
It means, what is it?
Yeah.
Isn't that funny? Yes. See, I thought that was funny too. The other thing that I thought was sort of funny is that I finished my sermon on Thursday, and on Friday, the officers and Meg and I had a meeting to prepare for the vestry meeting this week, and we spent a lot of time talking about the budget. And of course, I didn't know that we were going to be talking about the budget. And so I said to them, you know, my sermon for Sunday, if it had a title, would be something like, when is enough enough? So here we are talking about the budget of all things. And when is enough enough? All right. So here we go. We know, we Christians know, that when we talk about our God as a God of abundance rather than a God of scarcity, that notion is a foreign notion in our culture. Larry Lindner, who has a widely syndicated column in the Washington Post and the Boston Globe, writes about what he calls portion distortion, the government's definition of portion sizes. So consider, for instance, a serving of pasta. The government says it's half a cup cooked. That comes to about 32 strands of spaghetti, or four twirls of a fork. There are other government-defined servings. French fries. How many French fries in a serving? The government says 10. Then there is a frosted cake, a birthday cake, right? Government says 1/16 of a frosted cake, which is 2 fingers wide. Yes, exactly.
And I eat ice cream too.
Right. Then it says, a government says 4 to 5 ounces of wine is a serving, which would roughly fill about half a teacup. Now, when I go to a restaurant, they ask me if I want 6 or 9 ounces. Not 4 or 5, 6 or 9. Restaurants have developed a marketing strategy to serve huge amounts of food on the plate. We think this heaping plate is just a single serving. If we don't eat it all, we request a doggy bag, which we think is just an indication of how health conscious we are. Portion distortion is a danger for us today, just as it was for the people of Israel. In Exodus, the Israelites are challenged to live on the portions of quail and bread that the Lord gives them in the wilderness. Every evening, quails appear and cover the camp. And every morning, there's a layer of fine, flaky stuff called manna. It's enough to live on, but it's a strictly regulated portion. And when some people attempt to stash it away for the next day, it spoils overnight. And when others try to gather on the Sabbath, they discover there's nothing to eat. All of which raises the question, why are we so reluctant to accept the basic portions that we're given? Why are the Israelites, and why are each one of us, hungry for more than we really need? This overly active desire to acquire raises issues of trust, contentment, and moderation. Moses instructed the people, all of this is here for you. But then he said, let each family take only as much as they need so that there will always be enough for everybody. That is a revolution in thinking in our current culture. We are constantly encouraged to get more. More material goods, more status, more worldly wealth, to get the newest, the latest, the brightest and shiniest, the best and the biggest. My mother used to say that when I was a toddler, I would say to her, just one more and that will be all. Well, of course, then you get another one and you want another one, which will be all. How is it that before I was even old enough to go to school, I was already encultured with a sense of scarcity? I had learned I needed more. In 2017, Ken Parker participated in the Unite the Right rally in Charlottesville. A former Grand Dragon of the KKK, he had joined a Nazi group after concluding that the KKK wasn't hateful enough. His intention in going to the white supremacist rally was to start a race war because the KKK just wasn't hateful enough. Except that over the following year, he got to know an African-American neighbor, William McKinnon III, who was the pastor at All Saints Holiness Church in Jacksonville, Florida. And Parker had a change of heart and was recently baptized in McKinnon's mostly black church. So how much is enough? The first reading tells us to take only enough. It tells us to leave some so that others can also share in the bounty God has provided. If we could cultivate that understanding, our world would change. We would not have a world where a billion people lack water or food or education. We would have a world where everyone would have enough. As I was preparing this, I sat at the computer and played with some numbers and discovered some interesting things. I discovered that the median income in Montgomery County is $108,000. I discovered that the median income in the United States as a whole is 62. And then I discovered that in the world economy and the world population, 108,000 means that 99% of the world is poorer than we are, and only 1% is richer. And my thought is that most of us do not see ourselves in that perspective. So, portion distortion is a danger for us today, just as it was for the people in Israel. In Exodus, the Israelites are challenged to live on the portions of quail and bread that the Lord provides them in the wilderness. And every evening, quails appear and cover the camp. And every morning, there's a layer of fine, flaky stuff called manna, which Moses says is the bread that the Lord has given them to eat. It is enough to live on, but it is a strictly regulated portion. And when some of the people attempt to stash away something for the next morning, the manna spoils overnight. And when others attempt to gather it on the Sabbath, they find there is none. So why are we so reluctant to accept the basic portions we are given? Why are the Israelites, and why are we, hungry for more than we need? This overly active desire to acquire raises issues of trust, contentment, and moderation. Nikos Kazantzakis was a Greek writer and a giant of modern Greek literature, a writer who was nominated for the Nobel Prize 9 times. And his novels include titles that will ring a bell, like Zorba the Greek and The Last Temptation of Christ. He tells the story of a monk whose greatest desire was to make a pilgrimage to Jerusalem's Church of the Holy Sepulchre. According to traditions dating back to the earliest centuries, this is the church that contains the two holiest sites in Christianity. The site where Jesus was crucified, known as Calvary or Golgotha, and the empty tomb where Jesus was buried and resurrected. Over the course of many years, the monk was able to save about 30 pounds, just enough to take him to his destination. The monk stepped through the gates of the monastery to begin his journey. But no sooner had he done so than he met a beggar, bent low to the ground gathering herbs. The beggar asked him where he was going. "To the Holy Sepulchre," he replied. "By God's grace, I shall walk around it 3 times, kneel and pray, and return home a new and better person." The beggar looked at him with longing in his eyes, and he said to him, "Oh, please, sir, give me the 30 pounds for my hungry family. Walk around me 3 times, kneel and pray, and return to your monastery." The monk paused, scratched the ground with his staff, looked into his heart, and gave the beggar the 30 pounds. He walked around him 3 times, knelt and prayed. And he returned to the monastery a new and better person, for he had seen in the beggar Christ himself right there at the monastery, and it was enough. Imagine what it's like for a middle-aged person to return to the old high school for a visit. She walks down the old familiar hallways, observes the students and how young they all look, recalls the faces of her own fellow students and how they seem to haunt those hallowed halls like ghosts. But then the visitor turns a corner and comes upon a familiar face. Why, it's one of her old teachers, that young man right out of college, the one they all liked. Only now, of course, he's not so young. His hair has gone gray, and he is probably nearing retirement. The two of them eye each other for a moment, and then he smiles with recognition. He speaks her name, and that's all, and that's enough. All she really needed on that occasion of visiting her old school was for one person, just one person, to say her name. Someone who remembered her, and it was enough. Maya Angelou's Aunt T was a woman who worked 30 years as a maid and another 30 years as a live-in housekeeper. On Saturdays, her day off, when she lived with a rich white couple, she would cook pig's feet, greens, and fried chicken, and then invite some of her friends over for the evening. The chauffeur and the other housekeeper and her husband would come to eat, drink, dance, laugh, and play cards. One night during the middle of a big whist game, the homeowners knocked on their housekeeper's door. They apologized for disturbing her. They said every Saturday night they heard the joy and laughter coming from her quarters, and they wanted to be part of it. "Would she please leave her door ajar?" they asked, so they could not only hear the joy, but see it, experience it, and feel it. They yearned for the warmth and happiness that their 14-bedroom house three cars, swimming pool, and who knows how much money could never buy them. So how much is enough? What does it take to be satisfied? When will we learn to trust God to meet our needs and to be satisfied with what God provides? We forget sometimes that God provided the Israelites with manna for 40 years, one day at a time, resting only on the Sabbath. And that Jesus promised we won't be left hungry, thirsty, or naked as we pursue the kingdom of God. In our superstar-saturated, lottery-obsessed, sensationalized society, we hear the seductive siren song of superlatives. We're told we should always want more. Don't believe it. To trust in God's goodness each day is the surest path to contentment. As Moses instructed the people, let each family take only as much as they need, so there will always be enough for everybody.